What's up, everybody? I'm making this intro recording Sunday morning over here. Hope you guys are doing well. The world is still fucking crazy with coronavirus. This episode is pretty fitting for that, too. This is an episode with Wolf and Achilleos. They are Overwatch casters, but they have a large background in a bunch of other games. I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you're familiar with Wolf and his StarCraft casting. He's on Heroes casting, a bunch of other games as well. Achilleos, too, from a League of Legends background. I'm really glad I got to get these guys. You know, there's been a little bit of a burden here trying to do this podcast with the pandemic going on. You know, my whole idea when I started this was there's enough esports traffic going through Seoul. And on top of that, I had enough events overseas that I was always going to have interesting people to interview. But with travel basically shutting down everywhere, you know, I've been very limited with who I can sit down and talk to. And in this episode, the conversation is really interesting because these are guys who left Korea right before the pandemic. They were called in for some work in Los Angeles. And then, you know, COVID outbreak happens and nobody can go anywhere. They weren't able to come back here. Their homes are here in Korea. You'll hear more about that in this episode. But they are some of the few people who are actually still traveling amidst this. And we talk about what exactly that's like. You know, they have to stay in this quarantine facility for 2 weeks. They're getting booted back out and we'll have to come back in again. I mean, everything's been crazy. So I think this episode is really interesting. I think you guys are going to really enjoy it. I'm really glad they were able to sit down and talk with me and share this experience. Before we get this episode started, real quick here, as always, if you like this podcast, if you're listening to this and you're enjoying it and it adds something to your life, support us on Patreon. We've been doing strong on Patreon to start, but there's been several months going by. We haven't really had any new supporters. So, you know, the money that goes to this Patreon just goes to support the podcast. It goes to pay for production and editing. You know, I love doing this, but, you know, the more we get, the better of a show that we can make this. And this is also our first episode with additional microphones, so it costs a little bit more. If you have extra cash, again, it's really appreciated. If not, no problem. And without further ado, our episode, our first ever multi-mic episode with Wolf and Achilleos. Enjoy. So, guys, thank you for coming down and doing this. I thought I would start this by just having you guys tell the story of, like, what has been going on in your lives right now? Because you were supposed to be in Korea for a while and then had to go back to the U.S. and then fucking coronavirus came out. And I didn't see you guys for a while, and now you're here, and you're going to be leaving again. Can you kind of fill us in on that?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people who follow the Overwatch League know that Achilleos and I lived in L.A. last year for about 9 months. So we were really excited to come back to Korea.
Yep.
And when we were signing our contracts for this year, it was with the kind of understanding you'd be traveling a lot, but mostly in Asia, mostly in China, and you know all the cities in China that we're broadcasting from, and then you'll be doing broadcasts in Korea. So back and forth, China, Korea. So you can imagine that with everything happening in China and then Korea being the number two coronavirus country for a little while there at the beginning, at least from what we knew, what confirmed we
know,
cases.
And what we still know.
Yeah.
you know, Blizzard was a little bit less than excited about having us stay in Asia and having people go to China. And we were in the States for an event or for a few set of events that we were going to be doing. And then we were just kind of told like, well, nothing's going to happen in Asia, so you guys need to stay here a little bit longer. And then it got worse, and then, can you guys just stay here a little bit longer?
And then America fucked longer? Everything up.
Yeah, and then it got over there.
And then it was, even if we could get you back to Asia to do things there, you just kind of can't right now.
So wait, where were you guys when you first heard about coronavirus?
It was in Korea when we first heard about
right.
it. We obviously had heard that there was this new virus starting up and whatnot, but we didn't know the global scale that this was going to reach.
Yeah, it was weird seeing it in the news, because I think I mentioned this on a previous podcast, but it almost felt like, you know how in a movie sometimes they'll have like a news story that's going on in the background that kind of comes up over yeah. and over again, and eventually it becomes the part of the main story. That's what this felt like, where I was in Tokyo with you for Evo, and I remember just reading about this thing happening in China and seeing them board up the walls, and it kept getting bigger and bigger, and then now it's just everywhere.
It's crazy. When we were in Tokyo, no one really took it in Tokyo very seriously in general. And then it took a long time for people in Japan, I think, to take it seriously compared to Korea. But even before we went to Tokyo, I remember Koreans were pretty nervous about it. People were starting to wear masks, and a lot of places were starting to require masks. There was even like a time where Chinese tourists were getting banned from going to certain places in Korea. Yeah. The coffee shop across from my house that had a giant sign in English, Korean, and in Chinese, like, sorry, like, no racism, but like,
please put racism a little bit.
Just a little bit sprinkled on top.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I remember going to the gym, and I watched the news on the gym when I'm on the treadmill, and like just seeing, like you said, it was like at first it was like, oh, look at that thing over there. And then it just kept getting like more and more and more louder, you know, how much Korea was talking about it. And then even before we went to the States, like everyone here was kind of like, we got to stop this thing. Like Korea was taking it very seriously, but no one in the States when I landed there, Not everyone even heard of it.
Not even a fuck.
People didn't even know about it.
Yeah. Barely. So you were in Tokyo. I was in Osaka. And that's kind of when we got the news of, hey, we need you guys to come to the States, and we need you to leave like 2 days after you get back from Japan. So it was a really quick turnaround of being in Japan because our then visas were expiring and we had to reset them, re-enter the country as a tourist, and then basically immediately leave so that we could work on the Overwatch League because none of the travel stuff was going to happen. So we got very short notice, like, we need you in Los Angeles and you need to get out of there now before things get worse.
This basically hit right before the new year started for Overwatch League, right?
Yeah. It was like
beginning of February. I want to say we flew on like the 3rd or the 4th of February.
Yeah, we flew super early, and Blizzard was working on getting us new visas, and they were worried that this could mess up that process as well, so they wanted us to come to America as soon as possible to make sure everything could get sorted.
So you were basically going back to the U.S. to get the visa sorted so you could get back into Korea while the pandemic was going on.
While we were in the U.S., we were going to do a few events, which we weren't originally like scheduled to do.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, for Blizzard, they looked at it as like a way to kill two birds with one stone. Look, you guys need your visas done. We'll put you on these events while things are kind of suspended right now in China and Korea. But I'm sure things will go back to normal and it'll be fine. But then, you know, we all know how that story ends. It actually hasn't ended yet, in fact, that story.
It's ongoing.
Yeah, and so you guys are back here now.
Yep.
But if I understand correctly, you're going to have to leave Korea again and then come back in because of visa complications. Actually, let me just explain for people listening, because this is probably obvious to us, but a lot of people don't realize you can't just stay in another country for an indefinite period of time if you're not a citizen there. So if you're a U.S. citizen, it's 3 months if you're in South Korea. So you can be here for 3 months. I think that's the same in Thailand. If you're Canadian here, it can be 6 months. But you can't just hang out there forever. But the problem now is that airports everywhere are shutting down. You can't travel just anywhere, no matter who you are. So when people would have to do visa runs in the past, this is all pre-pandemic, they would just go to Japan, you know, for a few days and then come back.
Yeah,
easy holiday,
hour and a half flight.
Most people go to Thailand or you know, Philippines or something like that. But right now, Americans can only fly from Korea back to America. So we're talking about a trans-Pacific flight here. And then on top of that, if you come back into the country, first of all, they test you for Corona. Did they do the nose test or the...
Both.
Okay.
Both.
And then...
Both
and the nose and the back of your throat.
Is that pretty unpleasant?
The throat one is so much worse than the nose one.
It's the thing is, I was really worried about it because I, like Seth, like really hate getting throat swabs done. And when he told me about it, I was like really nervous. I think that's why it wasn't as bad for me, is because I was like...
I set his expectations way too high.
But I was nervous about it, but you had to do it twice.
I had to do it twice, and it was terrible both times. I have a horrible gag reflex.
Ugh.
Like, even if I'm brushing my teeth and I go to like brush my tongue, I'll still just... like that. So when they're just like open wide, I'm just letting you know I might vomit. And they're just like, okay, open wide. And then they just stick it and then just like scrape it around the back of your throat for like four whole seconds.
It
doesn't hurt. It sucks because I'm like, I'm trying my best to not puke all over this guy.
Gag reflex the whole time. Like if they were doing it to me, if I felt like sick before it or something, I 100% would throw up too, I think.
Yeah. The nose one for me was kind of like when you jump into a pool and you don't blow out your nose.
Okay.
So you get like that chlorine in your water and it has that like kind of burning sensation.
Yeah, you burn for a little bit.
It was a little bit like that, but it was a lot better than the back of the throat swab for me.
And then after that, they put you on a bus. This is after you've arrived from the U.S., gone through the airport, yeah. They test you.
Well, you have to wait. They don't just put you on the bus.
It's a long process.
They take you back into the airport, at least for me. They took me back into the airport, and then I sat there for about an hour. I had to ask the military officer who was sitting there watching everybody who was waiting for the buses, you know, can I go to the restroom? He said, okay, go. Couldn't use a water fountain. Couldn't go to the 7-Eleven inside the airport that was 10 feet away from me to go get like a bottle of water or a snack or anything like that. You just have to sit there. Then they took us and put us on the bus, and then I had to wait an additional 40 minutes for the bus to leave.
And so the bus takes you to...
Straight to a hotel.
To a hotel, yeah. But this is...
one it's going to be when you get on the bus.
And just to make this clear, so you guys have to pay, when you go to the hotel, it's $1,400 US.
About, well, it's
about 11.
It's like 1150 or something like that. Like,
yeah.
1.4 million Korean won.
And you're basically like in jail at this point in time, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They've like locked you in there into this hotel room. You're alone.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think the craziest thing about it to me was
this, by the way, this is 2 weeks real quick.
Two weeks,
right?
14 days.
14 days.
Well, 14 full days.
Yeah.
So the day
like
that you arrived
days.
Doesn't count.
14 24-hour
yes.
cycles.
Yeah.
And like, you can't leave.
The day you arrive doesn't count, and the day that you, like, leave doesn't count as a day either. You have to, like, it's like 14 whole days. And, like, if you land at, like, 5 a.m., for example, and then, you know, go through all that process that Seth, all that shit Seth was just talking about, you go through all that, you get there at like 2 p.m. and you do the whole day in the hotel. That doesn't count until like the next day is the first day. So if you're coming to Korea, I recommend that you land late, you know, land at like 7 p.m. or something like that. Otherwise you like waste a whole day of your life. The craziest thing about the process in the airport for me was, you know, I've lived here for a long time. I've had long-term visas before. The visa I'm on right now is not long-term. It's kind of a temporary visa. Which doesn't, like, it's only for 3 months, the same length as a tourist visa. It's a work visa, but it's like a short-term visa. So, you know, you're not allowed to stay, you're not allowed to quarantine at home if you have that visa. Now, if you have an F visa or a long-term visa, an E6 visa, one of the other longer ones, like I normally have, you can quarantine at home for 2 weeks. They just GPS track your phone. But I went there and I explained to them, look, I know I have this visa, but I've lived here many years, and I went through the whole explanation. I was like, I was nervous, but I was like, I'm gonna say it in perfect Korean. They're gonna believe me. And then someone came over and was like looking at things. She was like, show me your housing contract if you live here. I was like, I had already prepared this because I was like, I think I might be able to convince them to let me quarantine at home. So I showed her my housing contract with my address, my name on it signed, everything. And she was like, oh, like she was just kind of like, oh, you're not like bullshitting me. Like, and she was like, okay. And then she talked to somebody, and then she signed the paper that said I can quarantine at home. And I was like, oh man, unlucky Seth couldn't figure this out, because Seth was like already on the bus, and I was like, I don't know how to even tell Seth I did it.
My housing contract is not in my name, it's in my wife's name.
Right.
So I wouldn't have been able to pull this stunt.
Yeah.
I was actually the one who told him that he probably could get it done because his apartment is
in
his name.
Wait, you had to go to the hotel anyways though, right?
So it worked, and then, you know, you always hear about those immigration like back rooms where they take you to the back room and like question you? Like, As soon as I went to the immigration part, the normally part where they check your passport, the woman there just like, she looks at me and she's like, so did you come here to eat budaechige? And like, she's making a joke because she's a fan. She's like my fan.
Oh, from your Twitter account. Yeah.
Like, okay, like this is all going to work out. Like, I'm about to pass immigration. This girl knows who I am. I've got the signed paper that says I can quarantine at home.
I'll never find the drugs in my ass.
And as soon as I'm about to walk through that part, a dude comes over and he's like, hey, can I talk to you? Like in perfect English. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And then he took me to the back room, which was just filled with like people who were all sad and all had like...
I've been to this back room before. If you ever pulled out of an immigration line into the back room and it's just a bunch of people who are about to get fucked over and sent back home, or something bad's going to happen.
Yeah, and everyone's in there like crying, and like one guy's in there like, no, my stepdad is here. He's like, he didn't answer the phone. I think you have to go back on the plane. He's like, no. Like, and it's all this like really sad stories.
Yeah.
And eventually, like, I wait in line. Eventually, they call my name because they took my passport away. They call my name and they're like, yeah, so you have to quarantine the facility because you have this specific visa. And I'm like, no, but I have a house. And he just looked at me and said in Korean, like, it doesn't matter. And I was like, and he's like, so you don't have the money to pay for it, right? Is that why you tried to quarantine at home? I was like, no, like, I can pay for it. And he goes, okay, that's fine. And then just, like, snapped the thing.
Oh, really?
and then like, they were worried that, like, you know, it's technically not legal, I guess, for me to go quarantine at home with that visa. But they were also just worried that, like, maybe I was going to try to get out of it or something. So they like questioned me in there, like, how much money you have, all this stuff. And like, I was the guy that might, like, okay.
What do you pay in cash for that? How does that
work?
You
can pay in cash if you have it, but normally, like, bank transfer is okay, as well as credit card.
Credit card. That's how
you can swipe your credit card, and they put you on a bus and jail you in the hotel. That's crazy.
Well, you actually don't pay until you get to the hotel. And I didn't have this experience, but I'm sure Wolf will talk about it in a little bit, but, like, sometimes people get there, and they might not.
Well, the card bounces or something.
Well, they might not have known that they had to pay for this.
Oh, yeah.
And so like, we fully were aware of what was going
to
happen.
You had to sign a paper before you get on the plane. People are at the hotel saying they didn't know they had to pay. I'm like, well, did you just, like, read the paper?
Well, people are they'll either be a mix of ignorant, or they're trying to, like, find a workaround or something like that. Yeah. But, like,
they're trying to Karen their way out of this.
We
built the hotel.
Yeah. Well, we researched the shit out of this before we had left, because, I mean, we were, you know, pushing for Blizzard to help make the arrangements for us to go back and whatnot. And, you know, luckily, like, one of the guys on their legal team was also, like, pretty helpful in figuring out a lot of information, making sure that our visas were still going to be valid by the time that we entered the country and whatnot. So, you know, we were pushing for it. So we were very much aware of what the process was going to look like. And we figured best case scenario is that we get to quarantine at home somehow. But in all likelihood, we're going to be at this facility. And we accept that. And we are as mentally prepared as we can possibly be to get on this airplane. But so, like, when I got to the hotel, you have to wait, and they go through everybody who's on the bus, basically on the in order of you getting off the bus. I have so many fucking bags when I get off the bus because I've been gone for so long. I have all of the clothes that Blizzard gave me for the entire Overwatch League season, all of the wardrobe that they purchased for me. That's one suitcase. I have two other suitcases that I had taken with me just to because I thought I was going to be away for like 2 months. So I took like 2 months worth of clothing. And then I have a Pelican case full of all of our broadcast equipment that Blizzard has given me, and I have my backpack with my laptop in it. I'm hauling all of this around after I had an appendectomy, and I'm not supposed to lift anything heavier than 15 pounds. All of these suitcases were overweight when I checked them at the airport.
Oh my God.
So I'm like the last in line getting into the hotel lobby, and then you basically just have to sit there in chairs that are all just kind of like spaced apart. And then you go through, they take your temperature, they write down your information and whatnot, they look at your passport, they put some extra stickers on it, and then you go and you go to the guy and he's like, oh, how would you like to pay? And he's like, you know.
And in my case, I was also last in line, and there was probably 8 people who ended up in that room with me.
About 6, I think.
And I should point out, it's like a repurposed, like, hotel banquet hall.
Yeah, it's like a conference room.
A conference room. And, like, everything is just covered in, like, plastic all over the floor. Like, you're in, like,
oh, really?
An insane asylum. It's, like, covered in plastic. The walls,
like,
are covered in plastic.
You're one of Dexter's victims.
Yeah. The floor is covered in plastic. And everyone's wearing hazmat suits, except, like, the passengers, right? And they make you wear gloves and, like, put hand sanitizer on the gloves. But otherwise, you're wearing whatever you traveled in.
Do you have any photos of this or anything? Or video?
I'm not supposed to take your phone out at all.
That's
but like
crazy.
Everyone's in hazmat suits, so it's like, and then you go through like I had to go through like 6 dudes, like 3 on one side of the table, like this L-shaped, 2 tables, 3 dudes, and then 3 dudes, and like they asked me a bunch of questions, made sure I had the app installed because you have to have this app where you submit your temperature twice a day.
Yep.
So when I get to the end, he's like, "All right, get in the back of the line of the people paying," and then there were like, I said there was like what 8 people in there. I'd say 5 of them had a major problem with paying. The first guy had twin children, and they looked like maybe half Korean, half American. Even the father looked like half Korean, half American, and he had his twin children with him, one boy, one girl, and they were 17 years old, he said. And he said that the embassy told him that if they were under like 19 in Korean age, that they could stay in his hotel room and quarantine with him. But when they, and like the airport said that as well, and then when he got to this place where he had to pay, they were like, yeah, so that'll be 4.2 million won. He's like,
oh, because he has to pay for each room for each kid.
And he was like, no, what the fuck? And he was like screaming at him. He could speak Korean like decently well as well, like about my level, I'd say. And he was really angry, and like he was calling the embassy, and like it was a whole fiasco. And then like everyone behind him wasn't just like, they weren't just like, all right, you go do the phone call, and then like the next person go pay. So we're all just waiting, and then eventually they're like, all right, next person. Then the next guy is this French guy who literally admitted on the bus when he was talking to some of the authorities who didn't want him to get off the bus, like he came here to date this girl that like he met online.
What?
And he's trying, he doesn't have money. He doesn't have money to pay.
Oh my God, I'm in fucking pain.
He doesn't have money to pay. Like he just doesn't have the money. And he's like, no, she's gonna send it to me. And then like,
oh my God.
And so this guy he was talking to, by the way, the guy with the paying, I don't know if you're the same payment guy, but he speaks perfect English. Like he's not like gonna be fooled by any bullshit. And so he's like, well, I'm going to call her because she hasn't sent the money to us yet. Like, I need to call her. And he tries to call her. And with like the quarantine phone, she doesn't answer. And he calls like four times. He's like, she's not answering. He's like, I don't know what to do. We might have to go back to Paris or whatever. And he's like, no, she'll answer. And then he's like, can I call with your phone? So at least she'll know, like, oh, he's calling me. Like, it's not a weird number or something. And he hands the phone to the guy, the payment guy. And he's looks at the phone. And the text message comes in that says, who the fuck is calling me? And he just looks at it and he goes, I don't think she does. She, are you sure you know her? Like, and I have to sit behind this for 30 minutes. And another guy shows up who literally only has a small, you know, those like gym backpacks, like,
yeah,
little stringy ones. You like pull them tight. That's all he has with him for 2 weeks. And like, he has almost enough money. He's trying to make a deal. He's like, all right, so I can give you like 800,000 won
I've
now.
Got two chickens in this bag.
He's trying to haggle his way through the.
And I just keep asking, like, can I go? Like, I just kind of pay with a card. Can I go? And he's just like, every time I'd ask him, he would like be really angry at me in Korean. He'd just be like, wait your turn. It's not your turn now. Wait your turn.
I guess there's just no, in their heads, there's no reason to do this efficiently.
No, it's just.
Because you're just, it's just 2 weeks of fucking hell. So we can just. Yeah, so you're just waiting. That's also interesting to find that all the people that are trying to get through are seem like they're living on the edge or they're not making the best choices.
I mean, that's a normal person who comes to Korea on a tourist visa, right? I'd say, like, sure. Unless you're actually a tourist, which I'd say, in my experience, in Korea is, like, quite rare, right?
Yeah.
You've got a bunch of people who are just trying to figure out how to get a job out here.
Yeah.
There's so many people like that.
Yeah. So you get down there. You get to your room, and you couldn't even go into the hallway, right?
Nope.
No.
You can open the door every day, three times a day, and they will bring you food and a trash bag every day.
Trash bag once a day, and then they put, like, food out, and...
It's just doshirak.
They used to notify you when you were allowed to go out of your room, but I guess that the rules change or whatever. You just get it whenever you want. It came at what, 7:30?
It's like 7:30 a.m.
Noon, and then 6, like, I think it's supposed to be. But it always came early. It's like 6:30 in the morning, food's there. I wake up at like, you know, right before.
And they just bang on your door. Like, if the first time that they knocked on my door, I thought that my, like, test came back positive, and that I was going to get dragged out of this hotel room, and that they were going to have, like, send me to, like, a hospital or something. But I just hear this, like, huge banging on the door.
Bang.
It's fucking 7:30 in the morning. And
are these military people doing this, or it's not hotel staff?
They're mostly soldiers.
Yeah. So this is basically like it's a hotel, but it's just been taken over by military and medical staff, and
they're mostly like really, really young as well. Like, I'd say like 20 to 22, like, on average in my experience. But yeah, they bang on the door, and like, you, the first few times you're like, what the hell? You think like there's a problem because you forget that your food is coming or whatever, because you're not used to like having someone bang on the door and open it and then like grab your food. And so the first few times it happened to me, I remember just like opening the door and being like, oh, what's going on? I put my mask on, and then I like open the door. And then you just see like a dude with the hazmat suit just casually putting food down next to the next door, next to the next door. You can like practically hear him whistling. It's like so casual.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just, dun, dun, dun. And then the food gets put down.
It was so weird because that happened. It woke me up. So I jump out of bed. I'm just like, oh, what the fuck is about to happen here? Like, are they going to tell me that I have to leave here, that I have coronavirus? Like, what's going on? Do I have to do the test again? And I open the door, and then there's just nobody there. I'm like, fucking ding-dong ditch me? Oh, like, wow. What is... And I look down the hallway, and then the dude is there in his hazmat suit, and he's just wheeling along a car that's just full of doshirak.
How is the food?
Terrible.
Maybe like... two decent meals, and then the rest of it was just like bulgogi.
Pork cutlets. And,
it was bulgogi for me, like almost every day.
But it was mostly bulgogi. And when you get into the room, they give you like five things of ramen, like instant ramen to make. And then there's like instant coffee. I think for food and drink that might. Oh, there's like a couple
smoker,
bottles of water.
I mean, you were able to smoke in the room.
Oh, if you're smoking, no. They had to yell at people for smoking out the window and stuff like that because you like barely crack the window open.
Yeah, you couldn't smoke at all.
Yeah, you just like can't smoke. You can't go outside at all.
Yeah, and they so every day too, about like three times a day, sometimes more, just really based on whatever the fuck they felt like. The blast this long announcement in English and in Korean. Like saying, like, you cannot leave your room for any reason. This is an announcement. And at first it used to say, this is an announcement from the situation room, as if it was, like, cool and official. But they dropped out eventually. They would literally say, hello, for those staying in this quarantine facility, this is the situation room. firstly, and it was like, it was like a, you know how like a Korean,
like, it's like very poorly written bad English, like,
so it would be like, it's like, it's like, you know, when Koreans learn to write essays in English, this same thing you learn in like second grade where they're like, okay, so you could say firstly,
yeah,
secondly,
yeah,
in conclusion, right?
Yeah,
that kind,
yeah,
of thing. So it was like, firstly, you must not leave your room. And then it was like, secondly, you must check your temperature from every day between, or before 9 a.m., before 5 p.m. And then like some other managerial stuff. And then like the last one was always like, if you're caught, no smoking, please, please be considerate of others. If you're found to have been smoking, I think the penalty was
like $100 fine.
Yeah, I was just like, well,
so honestly, if I was like, a smoker, I would have been smoking.
If you're a smoker and like you managed to get like duty free on like the airplane, because like duty free shops in the States are all shut down. You can't go shopping at all duty free right now.
Okay.
And you know, I was like, well, I know that I'm not going to be able to really get alcohol while I'm in here, and I'm going to want to have a drink every now and then. And I asked the airplane staff. I was like, "You guys still have duty free like in flight?" And they're like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Great."
Oh, so you got a bottle?
I was like, "I will have a bottle of 12-year Scotch, please."
Nice.
I went to a liquor store before going to my friend's house because he's the guy who keeps my car in America because I have a 1998 Volvo in the States that this guy takes care of for me.
Piece of shit.
Nice. I mean, it's great. We used to drive to work in it every day. But anyway, I was going to his place. I was sleeping at his place. He's not too far from the airport, so. He was going to take me, and I just went to a Korean liquor store near my where I was staying in downtown and grabbed a bottle of Crown Royal. That's all I had in mind. And then I went to the convenience store. They let me go to the convenience store. They didn't let him for some reason. But
when you were in the airport, you could do it, but you couldn't.
Yeah, it was bullshit.
Well, okay, so when you must...
I had nothing.
You got through, like, pretty late, and then I got through, and it was me and a Kyopo guy. By the way, Kyopo is, like, a Korean person who...
Korean-American.
Basically Korean-American. Somebody,
right.
Not necessarily American, but who is Korean,
sure,
but can't necessarily speak Korean and did not live
of
most
Korean
of her life.
Descent,
he's coming back to his home country.
Yeah. Anyway, he's there, and he's freaking out, and, like, he's, like, I could see him typing, like, in Google Translate, like, sentences, because he wants to ask questions to the police officer. And then, like, I just walk up to the police officer. I'm like, hey, can I jump really quick? Like, in Korean, I'm like, can I go to the 7-Eleven really quick? And he looks at me like it's a really strange thing that I would ask him that. Like, why the fuck would he ask permission? He's like, yeah, of course. And so I just went there. And I bought
double
four,
standards.
I bought four Tsingtaos because I really like Tsingtao. And then that's all I bought. And then I was sitting there waiting for the bus for like 10 more minutes. And I was like, no, I should buy more shit. And then I went back and I was scared they're going to seize the beer if they found out about it. So I was like, all right, I can get away with four. And I bought like just a bunch of snacks because I was like, who knows? You know, the food could be so terrible that I'm starving. And people who had been through quarantine before.
Well, yeah, Ryan, our producer, yeah. he got stuck in quarantine here, and I had to mail him a box of just food, of like ramen and stuff, because I mean, we don't have Ryan on camera, but they were stealing your food. People were stealing the food from outside of his door.
And I was warning
you guys about this before you came.
I heard that, and I asked him a bunch of questions. Yeah, the food was terrible. I was like, I'm getting as many snacks as I can.
I was expecting such he went during like the start of all of this, so like this is when like the systems were just being put in place and they were trying to figure out like how do we handle all these people trying to come into the country and whatnot. So you definitely took like the brunt of everything, but hearing your stories, I was expecting such a more horrific situation of, you know, is my food gonna be there, is it not? Meanwhile, like, I would sometimes just sleep through them bringing me food. And then I would wake up and the food would be sitting there like after 5 hours. I'm like, well, I'm not going to fucking eat that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's gross now. But, you know, it was still there.
It was gross. But spoiler, it was gross when it was
gross
fresh
when I first arrived.
Yeah,
but
I'm
it was more gross.
Yeah. Those cheap Korean lunchbox meals are pretty.
Yeah.
They're pretty bad.
They're $3 for a reason.
So what are you doing to stay sane in this just, I mean, you're basically like in a prison.
Yeah.
Or in Seth's case, kind of like a paradise because you could play World of Warcraft all day.
I have been training for this my entire life. You know, I caused Wolf some frustrations when we were living together in Los Angeles because he'd be like, hey, let's go to the bar. And I'd be like, nah, I'm going to stay in and just play some
video. I don't
think
you left your room for 2 days when WoW Classic first came out.
Oh, when Classic came out, I left my room to go downstairs and get my food that was being delivered. And in some cases, I had our friend Dane, who was living with us, bring it upstairs to me.
Nice.
I was fully invested. But yeah,
his type of place.
Okay. I had my, we both had our laptops and whatnot, but luckily, like, I was prepared, and I also had all of this, all the equipment that Blizzard had given me. So I had an extra HDMI cord. And we kind of lucked out that it was one of those hotel rooms with TVs that do not have blocked off HDMI ports. So
yeah,
I was
still have the HDMI ports accessible, so you just can't plug your laptop into the TV or switch in the TV, whatever.
Yeah, so like he had his Switch plugged in. I had my laptop running off of it and using that as like a second monitor, basically. So I could just lay on the bed and, you know, watch Netflix, watch like my Plex server with like all
this almost
know,
sounds pretty nice, actually.
The thing that's frustrating about it is that you don't have a choice as to whether or not you can go outside. And that's the thing that's maddening even for me. Like, I don't mind, like, I can go 14 days never going outside, but I like to know that I have the option. And not having the option is what can really just start frazzling you a bit.
And as for me, like, I'm pretty much the opposite of Seth.
Yeah,
I have to go, if I have not stepped out of my apartment at least once during a day, I feel really gross.
I have to get out. Like, I'm finding this even with streaming now because, you know, I wake up fairly late, but then I'll turn the stream on, do that, and then I'm like, I have to get out now. Like, I can't if I don't walk around.
Along, you, like, miss the daylight, and you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I've had that. I've had that for sure where
I don't get any curtains. I don't give a shit. I want it to be like a casino in my house. I never want to know what time it is.
For me, it was kind of like, I don't know, I felt like I overprepared. Like, I had a ton of food, and I downloaded so many books for my e-reader, and I had, like, Switch games downloaded, pre-downloaded. And then in reality, like, I mostly just, like, read, like, the first book I downloaded and, like, played Valorant sometimes. And I just developed a sleep schedule where I wake up at, like, 8:30 in the morning and go to bed around midnight. So I was sleeping really well. The time went by quickly because, you know, it takes, like, about 20 minutes to eat three times a day. That's an hour gone of your day. I would play some video games with my friends. I could get on Skype and talk to people. It wasn't, like, hellish, but it was really uncomfortable. Just eventually there was this moment where I realized, like, I don't want to play Valorant anymore. I don't want to play my Switch anymore.
Yeah. And I want to walk around.
Angry. Like, you know, when you, I feel like, at least for me, tell me if I'm wrong, but, like, for me, when I'm in a bad mood, the last thing I want to do is read a book. Because I can't even read the words on the page because my brain is so focused.
Yeah, your mind's like in overdrive.
Fuck you, hungry caterpillar. Yeah. Caterpillar, whatever the hell you are.
No, I find, like, if I'm in a bad mood, I need to walk. I just need to keep walking somewhere. I gotta go somewhere. I
bought a resistance band before going because I was like, okay, I'm not gonna be able to run or
you were gonna get prison ripped and
yeah, exactly. That was the meme, right? And like. I was using it three times a day to do as many exercise as I could. And
don't drop the hand sanitizer, dude.
No.
But, yeah, I mean, the room, I made it into a meme. I uploaded a video on YouTube of, like, my quarantine crib because I got sent a bunch of snacks, and I organized the room, like, I thought pretty well, and I just wanted to be funny. Like, look at how sick my room is. His room had one, like, large bed. My room had two, like, twin beds. So I just made an L shape with it. So like, I created like a almost like a sofa type setup to where I could sit and play my video games. The hardest part was really like just like, you know, not being able to go outside. I mean, I know it sounds like duh, but like some days you don't really feel like the need to run around or go outside that much, or you know, you're like, okay, I'm today's one of those days where I'm hungover. I'm just gonna stay inside. We've all had days like that, right? But after doing it for like 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, like I thought the hardest part was going to be the beginning. And then once I got over the halfway point mentally, I'd be like, all right, what's downhill from here? But actually I found like no matter what, like the closer and closer I got to the end, like the crazier and crazier I got.
Yeah.
It was just 2 days left. I'm like, oh my God, two more days of this. Like that's two whole days.
I've even had that a little bit when I'm on an airplane where it's like the last 2 hours. I'm like, give me the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I can't handle it. It's, I don't know. I have to be able to move around and stuff. But so you were suffering from that kind of insanity.
Stir crazy or whatever they
call it. Stir crazy, but you were okay for the most part?
Yeah, my sleep schedule just went off the rails.
Really?
And honestly, like the only form of stress I think that I had was because I was at some points like waking up at like 9 p.m., and
dude, that's
my
the worst.
My girlfriend now wife was just like, I haven't heard from you like all day. I'm like, I'm sorry, like I've been asleep. It's just because there's only so much I can do.
Was there
do
sunlight
in here.
Coming into the rooms?
Yeah, I mean they had like they do have like the hotel blackout curtains and stuff, okay. But I would normally leave it parted, but it just it was just one of those slippery slope things where, like, by, like, right after the first week probably passed, I was waking up, like, really late in the evening and then staying up until, like, you know, 10 a.m., 11 a.m. or something like that, and then I'd pass out. So I'd, like, text her, like, when she's going to work.
And then, she's on just a normal schedule. She's like
she
a,
wakes up, it's,
a normal grown-up person.
She goes to
like
bed
makes
at
breakfast. And, yeah.
She's on a full. I don't know how she's married to me.
I mean,
now.
I'm just now getting my sleep schedule off of like the grown-up schedule. Like I was, like I said, I was waking up at like 8:30.
Well, the only person out here who casts who's on the grown-up schedule now is Artosis.
Damn. Yeah.
He just wakes up. I mean, his kids wake him up. He's got a bunch of kids, but I mean, I find for this line of work in general, everybody's a night owl.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just now starting to wake up at like 11, 12 again, like yeah. like my normal.
For me, mine is about like 10:30, 11. I'm like, okay, this is early for me. Let's see, wait, when do you wake up now?
When did I wake up to
Seth woke up today at like 4:30.
Seth just woke up. And
he's exactly right.
I know.
Okay, so I used to do this when I was out here because you know this is the problem. So for people that are watching this, you got to understand, if you're a caster, you do a night show.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, your work. It's,
yeah, usually.
Usually, for me, my work starts at 6:30 at night, and it finishes at like 11.
That was us for this last weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then I find I just can't go to bed.
Yeah,
after that, I don't know. I don't know how. Like Dan is like one of those fucking dolls where you lay it on its back and the eyes close. You know, like I. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I cannot just fall asleep. Like I'm the person that I will lay in my bed and then insanity enters my mind and I'm just staring at the ceiling and I have to get up and walk around and I struggle with sleep in general.
I had one night,
especially after a cast.
The reason why I woke up at 4:30 today, I was actually on a fairly like somewhat normal schedule. I'd say I was probably pushing about noon. So that for me, that's really good.
yeah.
But I had one night of pretty severe insomnia and just could not pass out at all. And I tried to go into bed at like 3 o'clock. Come 6 a.m., I'm still laying there awake. And I just said, fuck it. I got up. I went back to my PC. And then, you know, my wife wakes up, Sammy. She comes out. And she's like, why are you still awake? I'm like, I haven't been able to sleep. I don't know why. I was like, I feel exhausted. I want to just pass out. I even tried, you know, I have my night mask and everything like that. It's completely blacks out everything. Didn't do anything for me. I ended up being awake until like 11 in the morning.
I have
so it just it's just offset me now. So I have to work against that cycle.
Yeah, it's hard. You work out?
I have that like every now and then too, where like I'm up until usually I fall asleep eventually at like 7:30 in the morning. But some nights I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be a good boy, and I try to go to sleep at like 1:30, and I'm just tossing and turning and like cannot sleep until like 7 a.m. I bought a blind or a blindfold for that same reason. I haven't had it as much recently, but. Like, I have had that before. It's nasty.
Tonight, I'm just going to take, like, 2 melatonin and hope that I zonk out. That's it.
You know what's weird for me, too, is I didn't realize... Because, I mean, you're some of the only people that are even traveling in the world right now. But I was used to the travel helping me maintain my sleep cycle. Mm. Like, I would always come back to Korea, and then I'd be doing what you were doing, where you wake up at 8.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, this feels good. And then I would slowly move that cycle into this weird night owl thing. But I knew it was going to be fine, and it didn't matter because I'd be on an airplane in a month or two anyways, going to Europe or going to North America.
And reset it again.
And I reset it again. So I didn't realize this until the pandemic came that I've just trained my brain to rely on travel to reset my sleep.
For me, it's mostly about work, when I have work to do. And when we were in quarantine, we did work one day. We had there was a special show match that we had actually cast
from the quarantine facility, actually.
It was Lunatic High versus Runaway Show Match, which is a huge rivalry from the Apex Overwatch days when OGN was producing. And we did that. But prior to that, we obviously had nothing. There's no way we were going to be able to do it.
Yeah, no responsibilities whatsoever.
I plugged in a power strip in the hotel room, and I blew the fuse.
And this my phone was a really scary moment.
It was insane. And it was
this is in a live broadcast.
Well, this is as we were getting ready to do the broadcast the next day.
Yeah.
And I was doing like camera tests and stuff. And I plugged in this American strip because it's got all the ports and whatnot, so you can plug in American devices anywhere in the hotel room. So I plug in this American power strip and the whole room just kicks. And I'm just like, whoa, shit. And this is at like maybe 8 in the morning.
Yeah,
so you can't use the phone in the room. Yeah,
my phone is out.
The phone,
I can't.
The power's dead.
The whole room is dead.
Oh my god! Yeah, that's
so
right.
So I can't call the front desk. So I text him, and he's not awake yet. So I had to wait like a half hour, and then Wolf wakes up, and I'm like, I need you to call them and tell them that room 1244's power is out, and I don't know what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
So he calls them and says, okay, they're working on it. Take the card out of the thing, because, you know, you put the card in the slot to power, like, to turn the power on for the
right.
room.
He's
like,
take I hate that those out, hotels,
wait,
by the way.
You know, wait 10 minutes, and then see if it works. Try it, 10 minutes, nothing. Give it, like, another 5 minutes, nothing. He says, okay, well, he's still working on it. It should be okay soon. Waiting, waiting. He calls me, and he's like, oh, they say that there's a fuse box in the closet. They said it's going to be difficult to open, but if you can get it open, then that's where the fuse box is. I tried desperately. Like, it wasn't locked. Well, so there was a lock on it. I twisted the lock using my thumbnail, got that open, but then it wasn't like a push and open where it has like a, like that magnetized release.
Yeah.
It's just a door that was stuck and has no handle to open it. So I was like, what can I cram
you had to like wedge
here?
Something in there like you're trying to
so I tried
crowbar
using
it open basically.
Yeah, yeah. So I tried using a chopstick, but the chopstick was too wide. I couldn't get that through there.
Crazy.
I had to use a coat hanger. I had to get a coat hanger, push it in, and then twist it around the back of the door, and then pull that open just to get to the fuse box. And then
now, imagine a scarier thought, though. Imagine if Seth's phone was dead when his power kicked, and he couldn't call me, and then couldn't talk to the hotel staff, and his power was out.
I would have had to have waited until noon when they brought the next thing of food.
And then he would have
been ready at the door and be like, please, God, help me.
Yeah, and those guys don't speak English at all, and Seth doesn't speak Korean that well. So, like, that could have actually been a pretty nightmarish situation. Like, that was my first thought when you were like,
you could have technically just checkmated yourself out of any way to get things reconnected.
Yep.
So I've heard nowadays that it's part of the official, because I know some people in quarantine at the moment, and it's constantly evolving. Like you're saying, Ryan had his like the worst of it, I think, and then ours was a little bit better, and now it seems like it's significantly better. But now there's like a rule that if you leave your room once, you get a warning. If you leave your room a second time, you just get deported like immediately.
Did you have any moments where you saw somebody like just freak out, or because I mean, you guys are obviously pretty sane, reasonable people, but I mean, I have to imagine there's people that they get put in this setting and they panic and they, I don't know, try to run.
I didn't encounter a single other human soul the entire time I was in there, other than the one time they delivered the food. I opened the door pretty much immediately. It was like noon, so I was awake, and there was just a guy across the hallway from me who had a Westerner, like an American, like older guy. That was there, and he just went like that, and that was the only contact that I ever had, and the only like, other than that, it was just me talking to Wolf, and I didn't see like another person other than the quarantine facility people. He though, you told me that there was that guy who you could hear crying through the walls.
So
hold on, let me. Oh no, there's a guy crying through the wall.
Yeah,
let me put my mystery green ball of liquid in this.
Hey, we're having to reload over here.
Just zoom in on me because this is already in a cup.
This is fine.
Don't show any branding on the.
So, I mean, I dealt with a lot of emotional people breaking down in the airport and stuff. But there was a guy who arrived on, I want to say like day 12 of my 14 days, and he was like very, very loud when he entered the room, and he threw his things down. He seemed very angry. Couldn't hear any words or anything, but he cried a lot. Like he would just cry, like grown man for sure too. But like he sound like, as much as I can hear through a hotel wall, like based on crying noise, it sounded like he was probably like 30 to 35 years old. But like, yeah, he was just breaking
that's
down.
Some
and
serious
and, like,
detective was. 30, 35.
You know what I mean, like him grunting noises and shit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, we know what Odyssey sound like. I'm
just imagining you hearing the crying and having those scenes from Sherlock where he's identifying all the pitch of the voice and everything else.
He didn't sniffle. His sniffle frequency was definitely under 40.
So but he was just in there sobbing.
Yeah, he was sobbing a lot, and he came in late. Otherwise, that room next to my room, like that room was vacant. There was food in front of it from like maybe second or third day that I was there, and it just stayed there. It never was taken away, and it was like literally the same food. And the same trash bag. I guess people in the hallway realized, like, oh, okay, he's not there. But they left the food in front of his door. But it was always the same food, the same trash bag. So there was no one in there for, like, a really long time. And then I think I was against a wall on the other side. There wasn't anyone on the other side. So I was, like, pretty isolated until that guy came in who was crying. But there's two guys across from me that I would see a lot of the time when I went to get my food. And those are like the most haunting, like the most haunting image I think I'll ever have of this quarantine facility is like the first time I encountered the guy across from me, maybe on like the third or fourth day. And he was a Korean guy. Apparently not with like any family connections or proper visa, but he was Korean for sure. And when I opened my door to get my food and he opened the door to get his food, like our eyes locked. And like, he looked like he had showered in like 4 days. He looked like
he's just disheveled.
His skin is so pale. He looks like a fucking ghost. And like, he looked so scared when he saw me. And like, he's like, his door is halfway open. He looked so scared. And he grabbed his food and like looked all the way down the hallway and then like closed the door. And like, it made me like feel like, my God. Like, it was just like, it's like you forget you're like in the simulation or something. Cause all you have is this room, right?
Yeah.
You don't really look down the hallway. I had a pretty decent view. I don't think you had a decent view, but I could see people walking on the street sometimes. But like, you kind of forget you're in this like shoebox until you see like another person who like looks down the hallway and like looks like he hasn't showered in 4 days. Cause who the fuck cares? I didn't wear pants, you know, the whole time I was in there. And like, I don't know. That was really, that moment was the second, like, I think weirdest and worst part for me. The first part was when I first got in the room.
Yeah.
I saw that it was two beds and how tiny the room was. I almost threw up. Like,
really?
When I entered the room, I almost threw up. Like, I was like,
because you're like, here, oh it is. God, here it is.
Being this... here like for 2 weeks. Holy fuck. I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can go through with this.
I was just, man. You were fucking.
Again, I was expecting so much worse.
Yeah.
So, because
well, you had a
well, like when well, well, I mean, like when he went to when he went to his quarantine, there was no air conditioning, and that was like the first thing that I checked when I walk in. When I walked in, was just the fucking air conditioning.
Yeah.
Work.
No, and it seems like it's a roll of the dice because the government's basically just snatching up hotels, and these can be good hotels or complete. Piece of shit hotels.
I've heard stories of police barracks that used to be used for like police training that has like brick walls and like no windows.
Oh, and, oh my like, god! It's like the Vancouver Titans training facility.
Yeah.
But like I've heard of places don't have internet. I know Ryan didn't have internet for most of the time.
Yeah, if I didn't have internet,
that would have done.
I think I would just snap.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd be able to do it. But here's what's crazy about this for me is you guys are going to have to do this again.
You have to do it again.
Yep.
You have to leave.
Well, it'll be a little bit different for me. I'll be able to quarantine at home as long as it gets fucked up with my paperwork because I'm going to be going back. Because
you're officially married now.
So I'm going to be filing to get my spousal visa.
Right, okay.
So hopefully as long as all of that goes through and gets approved and they don't think that we have like a fake marriage for whatever reason.
I think it'll be fine.
We called the consulate in Los Angeles and the guy was really reasonable and he said like, oh yeah, like 2 weeks tops to get it all taken care of. So coming back, I should be able to quarantine at home. That's going to suck for me and my wife a bit because like we have to stay apart because she goes to work. She works in an office. So I won't be able to hug her, to give her a kiss or anything like that. Like, I'm probably going to sleep in my PC room on, like, a mat on the floor.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, because because otherwise she can't go to work. Like, if he interacts with her at all, like, she can't go to work.
Yeah. Right? So I'm basically going to lock myself in my PC room. So I'm basically...
You're no matter what, you're in an upgraded version of
I'm in a
what
much
you already
more,
did.
Yeah. Okay. My cat will be there. Which I can't really. Like, they keep saying that cats can get coronavirus. So it's like.
No, I know that tigers got coronavirus. They thought in Wuhan originally cats could have it, and a bunch of people were throwing cats out of windows when
The sixth time I saw the article, cats can get coronavirus now confirmed. Like the sixth time I saw it, when it was like, we know for sure
the
now.
Problem,
like,
the problem.
How do we know for sure? Like again.
Yeah,
like,
the problem with coronavirus.
The cat was sneezing.
It's like we don't know. I mean, it's hard to follow any news right now with this. I mean, for me, with this topic, with news, I was amazed how many people would write on my Instagram. This is when I would post a photo of me in a mask.
Mm.
Like, I have one of me in a mask. They have a thermometer gun next to my head. And I just had gotten back on Instagram. I was not using social media that much at all. And I thought, all right, I'm trying to, for this podcast and other stuff I'm doing, like streaming, I thought, okay, we'll use Instagram. And then coronavirus came. I thought, I'll get some photos of what's going on. This is world news. And all these Americans were saying, you shouldn't wear a mask. That doesn't help you. On my Instagram, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I mean, the World Health Organization also said that masks were bad, so.
I know. It's been hard to get any facts. Like, with cats with coronavirus, I don't know. I think it's probably fine, but.
So yeah. I think what happened here was people really misinterpreted what the CDC and the WHO said originally, because they said don't wear masks unless you're showing symptoms, because they wanted people to not be stockpiling masks.
I think it was also that they didn't have enough masks. But the problem is that, like, I think when they said that, essentially you're saying, well, then covering your mouth and nose don't matter, which it seems like, even though this is apparently still controversial in the U.S., yeah. I don't get...
I just remember hearing... They don't want people to overreact, right? Because, like, if you tell people, like, okay, masks are the only thing that can save you, right? Then people are going to stockpile masks. But then if you say, like, they're not necessary, then, like, unless you have symptoms and people who have symptoms are going to wear it. But, like, if you tell everyone has to have it, then, like, they run out. And I know I've told this story to you a million times since I've been back, but, like, I would see people scoff at people in L.A. for not having a mask. Like, ugh, he doesn't have a mask. I'm like, I'll give you $200 if you can have a fresh, unopened mask to me tomorrow, because you're not going to find one.
This is another weird thing.
No mask to be
found. In the U.S., it's not a mask-wearing culture. Europe as well. Like, yeah. I remember just coming when I moved here, and I saw this a little bit. You know, my dad works in Hong Kong, so I would go to Hong Kong and visit him as a kid, and people wear masks, and I just thought, why do they have a mask on? What's the point?
And so many superheroes around here.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but it's just... I mean, it makes perfect sense when it's explained that, okay, they, you know, maybe this woman doesn't want to wear makeup, or maybe this person is sick,
yeah,
and they just don't want to spread it. But yeah, there's something about Western culture, they just don't. Well, it's so foreign to wear a mask.
That's how I found most people didn't know about coronavirus in the States, because I'd wear my mask around, you know, the mask, because I happened to buy 7 masks in Tokyo, and those lasted me because I reused them and washed them and stuff.
Oh, so you brought those masks back to the U.S. and were wearing them?
I brought those with me to the U.S. and, like, I had them, you know, for a really long time, because that's all I had, right? And it was literally impossible to get masks. But when I my first mask that I was reusing, when I'd wear it to bars or whatever, like, I wouldn't, when I'd go into the bar, I would take it off, because no one's wearing masks in the States. And, like, I didn't realize at the time, like, how serious things were to get in the States either. Like, I'm not going to pretend like I knew all along, like, how this would be. But whenever someone did see me wear a mask in a coffee shop or a restaurant or whatever before I ate my food, they would ask me, like, what's with the mask? Like, you know.
You want to hear a pretty cringy story, man? You want to hear something cringy? Dan and me did it a while back, is because we used to get recognized at events. We thought, oh, because we've been in Asia for long enough, we thought, well, we'll just get some masks and we'll wear them while we're in, like, in America. And then, like, we put the mask on, and then people would just walk up and be like, Tastosis, why are you guys wearing masks? And we're like, fuck this, all right.
Didn't work.
Didn't work at all. But yeah, I mean, it's just not a culture where. I'm actually surprised that masks are being politicized in the U.S.
Like, I mean...
Everything in the U.S. is political now.
It's so weird. I'm like, are you really surprised?
That's so...
I mean, you know, for the small amount of effort that it takes to wear a mask, and then also just the fact that, like, it just seems like common sense, like spit particles come out of your mouth. And
that's how the virus is.
People sneeze.
The mask helps cover those up.
Originally, all these people on Twitter or Instagram that would write me would just be like, it doesn't stop you from getting it. But that's not the point. The point is that if everybody's wearing a mask, the person who might have it doesn't spread it.
Others,
Yes. It's a courtesy. You know, it's not all about just... It's almost like it's an American mindset of, like, I'm worried about me as the individual. Well, that's collectivist mindsets.
It's kind of... It's basically like wearing a condom. Like, if you read the box... If you read a box of condoms, it says, like, does not fully prevent, you know, transmission of STDs or stop pregnancy. Like, there's that.
There's a chance. There's that chance. Or something gets out.
And but it will help.
Yeah.
Like, it will give you a percentage increase, better chance of preventing that from happening.
I'm surprised I haven't heard that analogy before.
Well, I mean, if you try to use condoms as an example to a lot of these people who don't understand masks, they'll be like, what the fuck is a condom? And that's how they were born.
That's
but
what the Catholic Church wanted.
Contraception is against God's will.
So in the U.S., I mean, I haven't been back at all, right?
Sure.
I mean,
don't
this is
go.
Where,
don't go.
Yeah, I've heard it's. I mean, is the U.S. going to be able to fix this, or is this
going to
be...
Because this is going to be an extended
issue. We've
had
protests... right and left, by the way.
California is now, like, the largest hub for coronavirus.
Is it California? I thought it was Arizona. Is it California now?
It's California. Okay. They've overtaken Arizona, and both states have overtaken New York, which had that, obviously, an explosive outbreak.
Topically, a lot of states were talking about this, like, months ago. Like, you know, month and a half ago or so, a lot of states were talking about, like, well, I'm not going to allow people to enter my state. Like, look at how well we're doing, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to make people quarantine for 2 weeks if they cross the border. We're going to set up border patrols and stuff like that. And then those states are actually now kind of like the ones that are doing poorly. And a lot of states are actually talking about, I don't know if I didn't check really the news that much today. It might actually be literally have already happened, but I know a lot of states are in talks about like shutting down their borders unless, you know, they're requiring people to quarantine for 2 weeks if they cross the border, which is, you know, obviously what we've done here and what a lot of countries in Asia are doing for all international travelers. But
it seems like it's almost what you have to do if you actually want to just contain it.
What is New Zealand did it?
But like, what does it mean when we have like the states actually, this is in my entire life growing up, like the state's governor never really meant anything to me, right? Because the president was like the face of the country, and like I grew up in Georgia, nothing really special happened with a governor, you know, at least not in my eyes, right? Nothing that affected my daily life as far as I could tell, you know, as a young kid before I moved to Korea. But like, this is a moment where like the governors seem to have like a lot more power than they ever have, and like it's the states by state is more divisive in the U.S. I think than it's ever been.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
the Civil War. Or something
it does seem like that. I mean, growing up, obviously there's state pride for sports teams and stuff like that. But I mean, I grew up in Kansas, and then I moved to Colorado for school, and it wasn't like I was from another country or anything. But it seems like now these states actually have these real responsibilities that they just didn't have before.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the truth is, if you're in the States, in the U.S., you just kind of, it doesn't really matter where you're from. I mean, people make jokes about each other's states, but now it's suddenly, in an emergency like this, the decisions at the top actually play a huge fucking role.
Yeah.
And we're getting to see all these 50 different experiments on how this is all
happening. It's so
happening.
Interesting.
Well, in an area where there's still porous borders between the states.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very interesting time to see something like this.
Well, I mean, we had Orange County, like the mayor or whatever of that, whoever the fuck it was, they said that like you don't have to wear masks anymore, which is stupid. And then the governor had to come in and be like, nope, statewide, completely mandated. Everybody's got to wear masks, go outside.
It seems to me like
he's like trying to compensate for the people under him being incompetent.
It just seems to me like there's, you know, as long as you can get a mask, the difficulty of wearing one, I don't see the big deal.
I mean, I have seen so many. Oh God, there's some wonderful Karen videos out there right now that will just drop your faith in humanity even further, but they will also give you a nice chuckle of these people who are going out and they say like, I can't wear it because I have a health condition, and then
what is the health condition?
It nothing serious. Like I have asthma. I'm like, you can wear a mask with asthma.
Yeah. I know a lot of people with asthma who
like,
wear a mask.
You can wear a mask with asthma. Or it's like, I forget what the one she had, this excuse that she couldn't wear a mask. I forget what it even was. But it wasn't even like a respiratory issue. Hmm. And she was claiming that because of that, like she couldn't wear a mask.
It just does seem, just kind of big picture, it does seem like everything is political now in the U.S. It's very strange.
It is very strange. It's like, you know, it's very black and white. But like what I mean by black and white is red and blue, right? In terms of, are you left or are you right, right? But in the U.S., it's a very individualistic culture, right? Everyone's about me, me, me. And you're kind of taught you were special when you were a kid. You know, it's all about you. Like, take care of yourself.
You
want
to be an astronaut, Johnny?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
you could be president one day.
But
you
in Korea, it's kind of like, if I don't wear a mask, I could hurt someone else. Like, I want to be part of the group. And, like, everyone's doing it. So if you don't do it, if you, like, are like, well, I'm not going to do that, then, like, everyone kind of shuns you as well. So you're part of the group.
Yeah.
It's like, I was thinking about this recently when I was in the States. When you order a Coke in America, they give you like a glass of Coke. It's like unlimited refills, but it's your Coke. Like the waiter gives it to you. When you order a Coke in Korea, the person puts it on the table. It's for the table, right? Like
if you order one Coke, they'll bring the one Coke out
and
with
then
as
four
many
glasses.
Cups. Yeah.
And like it's just like a cultural, huge cultural difference. And I think that, I mean, America's always going to be this way. It's not going to change or anything. You can't fix it, but I think each person feels like, well, I'm not going to get it. Like, I don't have it. I'm fine.
I'll never
and
have
I think it's that kind of mentality. Like, I found myself sometimes when I was in the States feeling that way as well. Like, well, I'm pretty sure I don't have it. Like, if I go outside for just a few minutes, like, do I really need it? But I always wore it because, you know, it felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But I did have those feelings when I was in the States. Whereas here, I don't have those feelings for some reason. I don't know why.
I find myself, I'm much more self-conscious just about trying to do what the group wants.
Yeah.
You know, Like,
yeah, like I, you know, obviously I wear a mask here because A, I do want to be safe, but B, I don't want to get yelled at in the street, you know, is another big factor. Like, I don't want somebody who's going to get angry at me. And it's much easier to just wear a fucking mask than to risk being seen as, you know, doing something that's taboo. When I was home in New Jersey, I was like, well, obviously, like, I think that I'm okay. Like, even if I get coronavirus, I'll probably be fine because I'm young and I'm pretty healthy. But I'm staying with my father, who is now 60 years old.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, like, I'm going to wear gloves when I go to the grocery store. I'm going to use hand sanitizer. I'm going to wear a mask everywhere that I go. And then I'm going to put those things in the fucking garbage before I come in the house. You know, when we got packages, because Blizzard was sending us like a million things so we could do production.
Yeah. We're all working from home.
PC, right. You know, a camera, all of these different cables, a light and all this kind of stuff. Like, as those packages came in, I was just like, okay, I'm going to keep them outside. I'm going to wipe them down with alcohol wipes. I'm going to open them outside. And then I'm going to take the packages in because this isn't about me. This is about my dad. You know, I can't risk him getting sick.
I had a nightmare. That you know when you have these nightmares that, like, maybe you're in school and you're naked or something.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have pants on and you're like, oh, my penis. And I had that with a mask.
I had that nightmare
a month ago.
Night.
A nightmare that I was outside and I just realized I didn't have a mask on my face.
Mm. That happened to me. Like, I mean, not the dream part, but like I went outside.
You didn't have a mask on your penis in the dream. You're like, oh, my penis.
I forgot to wear my penis mask.
It's exposed.
I was halfway to the. Like, to the street that my subway station's on. So, like, I walked about, like, 3 minutes from my house without realizing I didn't have a mask on. Because I was in a hurry. I was super late for a meeting. And I was, like, rushing out of the door. And, like, I kept feeling like I was forgetting something. But I'm like, no, I have all my things. I have my documents. I got my passport with me that I need for this meeting. And then, like right when I got to, like, the sidewalk, the main street most people are walking, everyone was staring at me. And I was like, oh no, I am the foreigner with no mask. Like, oh, I'm the guy who's like, oh, see all these foreigners, all these Americans in our masks. Like, I forgot. I just ran home and got it because I didn't like, the weird thing is, like, I could just go into any convenience store like and I can cover my face like this or something and it'd be fine. Even if I didn't cover my face, like, they'd let me in and I could buy a mask. But I was like, I don't even want to go in a convenience store. I have to go all the way back to my house right now and get my mask. So I ran home and got it, but I was so embarrassed.
That. I keep doing that every time I leave my building. It's like,
how long do you think this is going to go on for, the coronavirus
here
pandemic?
Or generally?
I mean, globally, because this affects, I mean, it affects everybody, of course, but, like, this is fucking up all of our work so much. I mean,
it's insane.
Half of my work is hosting overseas events. Our studio for GSL and ASL is completely empty, which has just been weird. It's been very eerie.
I don't know.
People are out of, I mean, I'm so pissed at these people on Twitter who are saying that, like, esports does fine during this. Where I'm like, not if you actually work in esports. I mean, not streaming, but
yeah.
I mean, this has been devastating for people.
Oh, esports is online. Take that, real sports.
I know. So weird. Why would anybody even say that, too, during a pandemic where all these other people are getting hurt anyways? Like,
I've seen so many it was some of the dumbest, most, like, weird hill to die on comments ever. And it was just like, it was like when they canceled the MLB, like, baseball. And the guy was just like, thank God, fuck baseball, go coronavirus. Like, I hate that sport. I'm glad it's dead.
How garbage can somebody be on
like,
Twitter?
There are weird people like that on Twitter, man. Like, they exist. And they get a lot of likes, too. And you're like, so there's a lot of people who like this line of thinking.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not a big baseball fan. But, yeah, like, but I'm not going to say everybody who enjoys baseball and makes a living on baseball.
Well, I mean, to answer your question, I think countries that are doing well will eventually just make stricter rules. Like, the rules for foreigners out here are getting stricter and stricter. Even if you have a long-term visa, like, you can't leave without... If you leave, you can't come back without, like, basically proving that you don't have coronavirus and enter the country normally. You still have to quarantine for 2 weeks. It's become harder and harder to enter the country as a foreigner, even as a foreigner has a visa in Korea. Many of the countries that do well will just make their rules stricter and stricter and stricter until it's basically like the country itself is quarantined off from the rest of the world, like New Zealand did. And then that country will go back to normal. And eventually, like, most places will go back to normal, but it's going to take a long time. Like, I think there's a world in which we don't, like, the United States doesn't go back to, like, where we were in January, February of this year, like, until, like, 2022 or later. Like,
yeah, this is one of the things I've been thinking about is, like, okay, if a vaccine comes out, then we know, All right, let's say the working vaccine comes out. All right, well then
it'll still take a long time, but
yeah, it'll still take a long
still
time.
But might not even be developed until mid-2021.
Yeah, so. if it might take a few years, and then we're just going to end up like Korea's in an advantage against compared to the U.S. as an example, in that it is basically an island, even though it's a peninsula with North Korea there. It's basically just an island. So island countries have an edge overall because it's much easier to control your borders. The populations are not that big. So Japan, Korea, Taiwan, New Zealand, seems like it's going to get better in Australia. They might get out of this, and then we might be in some kind of weird ecosystem where it's like those countries you can travel to, but if you're in one of these larger landlocked countries, you're just screwed.
You know what's really interesting about the U.S. is they so much depend on overseas workers, like not just for labor, but also for like intelligent, you know, like high level jobs, like programmers, right? People who, like architects, a lot of those people are from overseas. I feel like the U.S. doesn't realize, especially the people who are like, yeah, close the borders. Like, I don't think they realize what the impact of that is going to be and the impact of like travel bans that may happen. Because, you know, obviously the EU was restricted from travel to the U.S. for a while. Now the EU is like, kind of like, well, it's your turn to like maybe not come over here for a while. But, I, you know, even if you have like a job opportunity in the U.S. as a European, you're like, well, do I want to deal with that? I can't come home for a little while. Like, this is going to get a little bit crazy. I think that not just like labor jobs, but I think, in fact, even especially so, like those really technical jobs where we kind of import intelligent people from around the world to the United States and they do great jobs. Doctors,
yeah,
engineers, etc. I think the economy is going to really feel that too. It's not just about like restaurants or bars closing, but like losing, you know, people call it like brain drain. The U.S. pulls a lot of high paying jobs. The U.S. pull a lot of brains and a lot of talent from around the world. But
yeah,
if people don't want to go to the U.S. anymore because of everything being, you know, disastrous and you've got violent protests, you've got the coronavirus, it's just not a great place to be. You know, I mean, that's going to affect things in the long term. I think that's something that we're all going to feel.
You think we got a couple more years of this, or you think it's going to be sorted?
I would love to be hopeful, but there is just no logical backing for expecting this to go away in the U.S. for a while, I think. And like the problem that is, and the thing that makes it so frustrating is that just if people would just shut the fuck up and self-isolate for 3 weeks, don't leave your house, it would be done. Like, for the most part, like it would maybe eradicate so many numbers. Like,
I mean, it would definitely drop.
You
would even out here
plummet,
I mean,
the numbers significantly if people just did that.
Yeah,
but
if we had, I mean, if we had like drones delivering groceries and stuff, which we're like almost there for, like that would actually be like kind of feasible option, I think. I mean, the crazy thing is, if this happened, you know, 20 years ago, like things would be a lot different. Like things would be much worse, I feel like. And there was the was it 1917 influenza pandemic, like where they also had lockdowns.
What, the Spanish flu.
Spanish flu was 1919.
I want to say 17,
it was right around there.
Yeah. You guys,
right,
you guys are 2 years
off from each other. So. Yeah.
But like, you know, I like don't know too much about that. But when I think about it and imagine it, and they had lockdowns and they had quarantines and stuff like that, and you know, tried to ask people to stay inside. Like, think about how much the economy took a hit in that period because people couldn't work from home. I mean, we're in a pretty lucky spot in a weird way,
right?
Yeah, it really, really sucks. I'm not trying to say like, well, we should be lucky we're in the coronavirus, but we're lucky that it's happening in this time where we can do video calls. And sometimes when I'm in these meetings where everyone's on video, it feels like that Star Wars hologram scene from the prequels where, like, the people who aren't there, there's, like, a hologram of them there. Like, we're all kind of there.
I feel like this kind of goes both ways, though, in that, I mean, like, obviously, like, is a difference from, like, the Spanish flu, like, when that happened. That takes a while to, like, circulate the news about how things are developing for the, like, in the country and what the plan is to try and prevent a further outbreak, because you know there's, you just have to rely on radio, like that's basically all you got is those kinds of transmissions.
And the radio,
like,
hadn't even really taken off back then.
Yeah, so like it's not even like a widespread thing, so like that takes a lot longer for news to travel, so things are going to be pretty bad for these days. Obviously the news travels instantly. Everybody gets that information instantly. The problem that I have is
choose
that,
to read it.
Yes, but the problem that I have is that by the same ways that you transmit news instantly to each other, people feel empowered to go against what is advised and what is not good for
the population because they have a platform now to share their own opinions. And that's the problem with social media.
Well, people get their own news now.
You can get your news from social media, but you can also go out and be a Karen and record a thing and be like, this is going on Facebook.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let me go into the store because I'm not wearing a face mask and that is unconstitutional.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I really want stuff to get better. It does seem almost like in the current climate with the way that news is consumed, it's like, everything is sensational. Everything is, I don't know. You can get any kind of story you want. I don't know, man. I mean, I'm. Are you guys going to be okay as far as casting goes for this? Because
yeah.
You guys had big plans before this pandemic happened. You guys were going to be doing the Asia circuit with Overwatch League, and
yeah, I mean, we were supposed to be kind of like Thursday, Friday, flying out of Korea, going to, you know, either Guangzhou, Shanghai, Chengdu, or Hangzhou, and then being there, and then Monday coming back to Korea, and then if it was a Korean week, being here for an extended period of time, otherwise getting ready to fly again. So my frequent flyer miles are crying, and they're not existence now. But
that might be the best perk about working in esports too, is the frequent flyer miles.
It was going to be so good. All that and the duty free shopping is going to be amazing, tasteless. My whiskey collection was going to explode. But yeah, I mean, like that was the original plan. That's what we were really excited about. And like Blizzard was a little bit worried when they kind of like pitched it to us. They're like, this is a lot of travel. Like, is this okay with you guys? And we're just like, fuck it, let's do
it.
I've always had
like a great interest in traveling to China because I just haven't been able to do it that many times. I've only done it, well, I mean, I've done it quite a few times, like maybe like 8 times or something, but
I'm always there for work. Or Shanghai.
Yeah, right. and Shanghai or Beijing, and like I've never been to Guangzhou before. Yeah.
Chengdu's supposed to be amazing for food. Guangzhou's
supposed to be very good.
Yeah, pandas in Chengdu, like,
but I mean,
I've been to Chengdu. I've been to the panda bear sanctuary in Chengdu.
I wanted to go!
Yeah.
It really hurts our league, though. Like, our league was set to be the first, like, global franchise league in esports, and we were all, like, it was supposed to be that from the beginning. It is. But it was supposed to be that from the beginning, and then, you know, we had to set up in LA, which was pretty awesome. We'd used it for one more year, and then everyone was like, okay, are we really doing this? We're really doing this. We're going to commit. We're gonna send every team around the world. The things that, like, the documents Seth and I have seen about travel schedules for teams, like, will blow your mind, like, how many planes people are supposed to take all year this year. But it was exciting, and like, it's just like we had a few of those events in the US, but it feels like just like the plane that is the Overwatch League kind of got grounded, and that sucks, you know. Like, I can't say like I'm happy about it. Seth and I are still getting paid the same amount of money, you know, as contractors to the Overwatch League that we were getting paid before if we were traveling. So like, from a monetary perspective, it's kind of like a win for us. We don't travel as much to work at home, but I fucking hate working at home. The same computer I sit at and like drink coffee and like read Reddit and like watch the news at is the place where like I open a game feed and put a Sennheiser headset on and like
do your job
and do my job at. Like, whereas normally I'm in a studio, I'm way removed from my home. I'm removed from my cats, like, running into my door, like, which is what happened in my last broadcast. Cats are fighting and, like, slammed into my door. I'm like, what the fuck is happening? I like a huge removal of home and work, and I almost enjoy the commute. I don't want it to be too long or anything like that, but, like, I like that separation. Yeah. And having to do my job where I also rest and chill, like, there's no choice. I have to do it, but, like, that's the hardest part for me in all this. I really don't enjoy working.
It's like that, you know, you don't shit where you sleep. You want those to be separate.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the same.
I don't know if that's the, I don't know if that's the same.
I'm just saying, you want a separation.
I'm not, yeah, I think you want to separate your work and play.
Yeah.
But yeah, the shit where you eat is a little bit different. But I mean, it's actually weird because I think I'm the only person that's doing any studio stuff because it's StarCraft's a 1-on-1 game.
Yeah, I mean,
I think GSL and ALSO are
LCK is running now.
No audience.
Oh, are they back in studio?
No, yeah. No audience, but it's the casters are back in LoL Park, and yeah, the players are there.
Damn.
But I mean, the players are pretty far apart from each other.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, team wise, all the players are tested, like, who live in the team house together and stuff. So
yeah,
it's like pretty much everyone who goes in there is like confirmed to not have the virus and tested pretty regularly.
Every time they enter, they have to take their temperature, they write it down, and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, every time I go to the gym, I have to log into this like book, and say that like I haven't been traveling internationally for the last 12 days or something like that. write my name down, write where I live, phone number, all that. Just in, it's like not.
You have to do all of that?
Yeah.
Every time?
Yeah.
I don't do that shit in my gym.
I mean,
mine is just,
gym's going to be the coronavirus hotbed.
No, mine just has the gym though, because I think this was passed like literally 3 days ago or something like that.
I was there yesterday.
Well, I had to do it starting yesterday.
Oh, yeah, they just had like the you know thermometer, put that up to your forehead, did that, and then your phone number and name as always.
I think they have these new rules here, but they're not all being followed.
Maybe they haven't
correctly.
Been pushed out to my gym yet. I'm going again tomorrow.
That's mostly what I did. I mean, I have to put my address as well there, though. But the thing is, like, the information that they get is actually not to, like, track you. The gym is not going to find out if you have the virus. Yeah. If someone else who went to the gym had the virus, it's contact tracing. So if someone who went to the gym has the virus, they can call you and let you know, like, hey, you probably have the virus. And then where do you live? Okay, tell those people, like, hey, this guy was in contact with a guy who has the virus. So then they can tell everyone, like, hey, I don't know if I should come into work because I'm near a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who had the coronavirus, right?
Yeah,
that's why we, like, have such a low, like, the virus transmission here is so low because the contact tracing is so good. You just quarantine everyone who's come into contact with anyone who's had the virus. It's insane.
It actually happened to one of my wife's coworkers. She went out to just like a barbecue restaurant and then got notified by the government, like, hey, you were at this restaurant recently. Somebody was there. Somebody who was there had the coronavirus. You need to self-isolate. And she did. That was
it. And if you have any symptoms, go get tested.
Yeah.
And you can
just,
and that was just the
end of the story. She just said, okay. And then she stayed home and then things were fine.
The government also tracks where you are on your phone. And, like, I know, like, that scares a lot of people, but, like, guess what? You're being tracked where you are all the time.
Your information is constantly being taken by sources.
But, like, you'll get coronavirus alerts sent to your phone based on confirmed cases or suspected cases near where you are. I recently did a recording in an island called Wando, and I was all the way out there, and I was getting notifications for, like, Wando on my phone because I was there. Like, I don't live there. But it was telling me, like, hey, like, a dude who got confirmed in Seoul, like, went to Wando recently, and he was in this exact area, like, and you just get a message on your phone, like, just be aware. It's like, cool.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. You know, I think that scares a lot of people, like, the GPS tracking and including contact tracing, but, like, I don't know. I'm, as a non-criminal who doesn't do anything wrong, I have no reason to be worried about people tracking me, and if it helps other people not get sick and it helps me stay safe, then, like, I'm all about it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I was comfortable doing it out here personally. I understand the fear. I think if you're in a country where it's more authoritarian, then these things stay permanent. But, yeah. Well, guys, thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. This was an excellent podcast.
You're very welcome.
Can I get you guys on again after you come back from the next quarantine?
Anytime.
This is my first multi-mic setup. I think this was by far the best podcast we've done because we have more voices here and everything. So this is awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thanks, man.
Thank you guys for sitting down and listening to this episode of the podcast. Again, if you enjoy stuff like this, content like this, please get out there, spread the word, write a review. But most of all, if you could support us on Patreon, that's patreon.com/tastelesspodcast. The money that you send us there goes to make this show better and better. And we have no intentions of stopping. We're going to keep building this thing up. And I'm really loving doing this. So, yeah, if you can, please support us. This podcast was produced by State. Artwork by Al Reese, music by Mark Lentz. Special thanks to our top Patreon supporters, Seth N., Rohit Sambadi, and Charlie Shiver. I love you guys. Stay safe, wash your hands, and wear a mask. Bye-bye.